This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, and we are here with James Allen Hall and his new book and a poem from James right now.
Biography. I was made for, made in, made to. I was dolled, posed for every eye, was made for drama. I confess, I lied. I was man-made in an Indiana factory. The first factor, my parents agreed, was a handmade doll brought out to sing for company. Pull my string, I laughed. Too high, a little long. My pitch was wrong. Wooden was a handmade lap, sewn up dummy. Wore the story I was made for. Told the truths. Cold wind whistled in the hollows. I sang the terrible songs while undressed. Who else was made to entertain you? Was one done up, done for, bullseyed, buried? This story is mine. There was a wound, then a world. It did not mean me well. One year I watched the snow pile to my door, all December, all January. This was the year I wanted to die. Learned another song, sang another way.
James Allen Hall, that is the best poem ever written.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
I mean, maybe I know I love other ones. And yesterday I might have had it. I'm fickle, I know. I love the one. But James Allen Hall, there's just everything right about that poem. There's right about that poem, including the way I feel about it. Well, I'll tell everybody who you are. You are James Allen Hall, and you're off for the summer, I hope, from Washington College, and that's in beautiful Chestertown, Maryland. The book, Romantic Comedy, won the Four-Way Books Prize in Poetry. Now, okay, so Diane Seuss wrote this great copy on the back cover, and we know what she thinks about it. But the judge is up to her. What do you think they saw in this book?
You know, I hope they saw. I mean, this book took me forever to put together. And Four Way, can I tell you this? It rejected it.
Oh!
I don't know, four or five times before. And it wasn't ready. It wasn't ready. And I think the book was accepted when it was ready. I don't think I'm.
What a lesson to my students.
I wanted it to be ready. This was a painful book. A lot of death happened. A lot of really traumatic stuff happened, and I wrote my way through it. But once you write your way through it, then you got to go back and put the trees where they belong. And that was really, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do the hard work. And then I did the hard work. I was able to get away enough to do it.
When I listened to the phraseology of you reading that poem, and I know what it took. I know what it took, where you paused, where you stopped your cadence. That thing was not scribbled out, believe me. And reading it out loud really helps a lot too, because it points out the craft. Well, I think that this book should have won that prize, but I can't believe that it was rejected.
Isn't that funny? It's just how life is for poets, right?
It is a great story, yeah. But I would like to hear another poem, and then we'll talk about it. So James Hall is the head of a very important place, and it's called the Rose O'Neill Literary House, and we're going to tell you about that later. But now another poem from, what is the title? Tell us the title.
This is On Dark Days, I Imagine My Parents' Wedding Video.
Here we go.
My mother, Anita Bryant, waves to the camera without looking at the men behind them, her chastity intact, unassailable as her perfect coiffure, dark as coffee, the white saucer of her face. The news conference is a whirl of men, microphones. Save the children, blaring on a banner behind her. I am waiting to be born, a child unlike others, one my mother would not save. The reporters' blazers are plaid, unbuttoned. He's disguised, like them, the man approaching the dais, my father. I love my mother, innocent, smiling at the softball questions. I like the hiding in plain sight that the man and the Anita are doing before they become my parents. I like knowing more than the camera. And here is the moment, their kiss. The man slaps a pie square in Anita's face. She hadn't seen him coming. She was saying, what they want is the right to propose to our children that theirs is an acceptable life. Then it's time for cake. I like his hate, which hates her back. She is my mother because she says, at least it's a fruit pie, then begins to sob. I like watching her dissolve. 30 years ago now, my father dead, buried, and no one remembers his name.
I like the way throughout the book you use famous people and television and radio. Tell us who Anita Bryant was.
So Anita Bryant was a former beauty queen. She's still alive.
She did something right wing. She did some right wing stuff.
That's what she did. She became a political spokesperson.
And she advertised orange juice. Did she orange juice?
Propaganda. Yeah. Florida orange juice, I think, actually. And she helped then, you know, because, of course, beauty queens should be political spokespeople everywhere. She became the spokesperson and helped repeal pro-gay laws in South Florida. And then when that was successful, she took the show on the road and she had all these press junkets around the country. And at one of them, these queer protesters pied her in the face, which is terrible. It's a terrible thing to happen. It's also bookmarked on my computer. Anytime I need, on a dark day, when I'm feeling my queer rage, I look at that. It's terrible. It's terrible that happened to her. Also, what she was saying was awful.
You know, it's such a good poem, though. It is such a good poem. And the reason it is, if you don't even know Anita Bryant, and I remember this vividly, even if you didn't know her, the Anita Bryant is such a metaphoric name that it could be what it means. And also, even that notwithstanding, the way you move back and forth across time is so hard to teach. I just don't even know, unless they go through your poem and parse it, would I be able to teach how you do that before marriage, after marriage? Is that easy for you?
Time is hard for me. I'm a Libra, so time is hard for me. And I also think that time is layered. I mean, memory is layered. So the things that happened in our past are still happening for us because we're living in the air of that. And
are you conscious of it, though, or are you just gifted or gifted and conscious? Let's call you just gifted and conscious.
Oh, I would say if you ask my friends who see my drafts, they would say that time is one of the hardest things for me to get right.
Got it right, baby. You got it.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm a Libra too.
Oh, so really?
But I didn't know that I had that problem with time. Now, one more thing to worry about. Okay. I want another poem. I want all these poems I can get.
All right. This is a longer one. And it's after Susan Mitchell, whose book Rapture just meant the world to me. One train's survival depends on the other derailed. In a bar in Chicago, like a bar in New York, the anthems hang in jukebox air. I will survive, maybe this time. Don't leave me this way. The bartender's nipple ring catching the disco ball's shrapnel light on a night which begins in wan November, dancing with a chestnut-haired Aries, the scorch of us hurtling like a train I want to step in front of. He takes my hand when we leave the bar, walking a greasy sidewalk to a private courtyard. He kisses me under a magnolia as fragrant as the one in the garden where I hid as a boy, the tree's opalescent sepals masking my upturned face. I'd fall asleep there, playing soldier, dreaming of a real-life G.I. Joe come to the rescue, smiling down into the plot, shovel in hand. He kisses me on a night so rinsed in purity it begs for its own ending. The night's begging lodged in me. We're parallel trains lurching forward, jaunting windows jaggedly aligned. Don't love the train, it craves to be emptied. When we part, a February starfield blooming in the dead of winter, don't miss me, he says, at the stairs to the F train, saying goodbye with a sterile hug. I miss the stars, which leaned in close. In November, I could die happy, his saliva drying on my neck, the breeze violining along the sloped avenue. The song expires in an overheated car, speeding eastward into the night, the snow lowering its gentle hammer on the skulls of lovers, the night I know, in my sudden blood, I am going to kill myself. Don't miss me, the disco ball moon says to the lake. Don't miss me, says a boy to the plastic partition, the snow melting down his face in tracks. In February, on a night stricken at last of starlight, shocked dumb, night with its shovel and its covering dark.
James, if everyone could feel what I feel and what that poem makes people feel, there would just be no wars. There would be nothing but good, greasy sidewalk, not just any sidewalk, greasy sidewalk, magnolia tree serving two purposes, hiding behind and the fragrance. Every line of that poem is a work of art. Every line in itself. I know I gush and I'm trying not to, or else I'm unstable. But James, I'm not kidding you. That poem, okay, I'm going to stop because nobody's going to believe me. They're going to say Grace is old. She's just tired. But I'll tell you that your poems are just, they should do. Does everyone know you?
I mean, well, I get around, but
let me tell them who you are. He gets around. That's good enough. So he's the author of two books of poetry and a book of lyric personal essays. Now You're the Enemy, I Liked You Better Before I Knew You So Well, and Romantic. They have received awards from Lambda Literary, the NEA, the Civitella Ranieri Foundation, the University of Arizona Poetry Center, and the Fellowship of Southern Writers. Are you Southern?
I grew up in Central Florida, and my folks are from Southern Indiana.
Oh,
so I feel like I'm Southern. Like, all right. So in the fifth grade, when we came to the Civil War, my teacher said we lost, and we didn't talk about the Civil War for a year. And if it wasn't for my curiosity, I would not have known what we lost. I went and looked it up, and I was like, oh, I'm glad we lost. So I think I did grow up in the South.
Did you ever write that essay?
I wrote a poem about that, actually, for my first book. And
were you alive during Anita Bryant's time then? She lived in Central Florida.
I think I was three when she got pied in the face. I think that was 1979.
Oh, okay. You were three in 1979?
Yes.
Okay. Now we know.
Now we know.
Let's have another poem, and then we'll find out even more about you. And I'm going to try to restrain myself.
Oh, you are fine.
No, you are on fire. You are, you know, I've got so many questions to ask you. Let's hear another poem.
Oh, sure. This is, I love Cher. She's my diva. So this is a poem with Cher in it. Post-apocalyptic horror show ending in a Cher song. The AIDS metaphor. What we imagine best, virus buried in every zombie movie, turning its host to living death. My bemused boyfriend argues that zombies don't have sex, are ahistorical, just nostalgia cut down to the guttural, the final image in this queer apocalypse. Of course the zombies outlive the heteros. They herd in and out of the all-American diner, lurching their suited bodies against the jukebox. Cher's disembodied voice pressing free. I found someone, her brassy tenor trumpeting over the broken dishes, the open, stinking freezers, thawed steaks sloughed out like forgotten skins. The threat is always someone else's fear. Imagine what the world wanted all along, a song, a way to remember us.
And they will.
Oh, thank you.
I kept remembering, as I read the book, I kept saying, where does courage come from? And so I'm going to ask you, what does it take to tell the truth?
When the choices lie and keep it inside, keep the thing secret, and then die, because that is a kind of virus that will kill you. Or tell the truth. You tell the truth if you want to live. And I wanted to live. Ultimately, I wanted to live.
So that answers my next question, which is, what does it take to tell the truth? Okay, what does it take to make the truth beautiful? Because your truth is. What did it take to make those words so beautiful?
I guess time. It took time and studying poetry and the desire to transform what happened to me and to people I love. So it didn't just stay the nasty, gritty, greasy sidewalk, right? It stayed, you know, it stayed memorable and lovely and gritty too.
That's a great answer.
I kind of believe that like comedy and tragedy don't exist without each other. I think there's always something darkly funny sometimes about one's own, you know, tragedy. Like you leave your watch on the top of the car after moving something and then drive off and you hear it slide and you're like, okay, I know I've just lost my watch on the highway. And it's funny. What else can you do, right?
Oh, we know that comedy is based in tragedy. There's not one joke told that does not have that underpinning. But what does it take to love your work? If I could only teach that to my students, what does it take to love your work? Because nobody will love it more than you do. If you send it out without love.
That's fascinating. That's true.
Well, what does it take? What do you love in your work? And then maybe we'll know more.
I guess I love the question that I'm trying to pursue through telling the subject or the story. Like I don't want an answer. I just kind of want to tease apart every little branch or every little narrative until I don't have to think about it again, you know, until I can just leave it there. I can leave it there.
Do you know when?
You think you do, and then you write another poem about that, too, don't you? And then you have a whole book of it. I don't know that you know why.
You're the best new thing that's happened to me in so long. So, let's have another poem. James Allen Hall. Okay. They teach at Washington College, and I told you, directs the Rose O'Neill Literary House and has a podcast, Breaking Form, a podcast of poetry and culture. We'll find out about that after the poem.
This is a poem called Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, I burn your Highland Park. I acid your Carnegie car dealerships. Your Squirrel Hill, sheer terror in winter. But most of all, I hate your Liberty Avenue, the last place one night I saw my little brother saying, wait here outside the after hours club as he disappears around the corner. I wait, hating your strip, half your shady side, all of Bloomfield, the bluffs and flats where he trades himself. I wait hours, then trace your Mexican war streets looking for my brother's car, so I could declare a truce in the battle he was fighting against himself. Your hot metal, your Fort Pitt bridge that leads headfirst into the Monongahela. In the morning, he's home. He cannot tell me where it hurts. I help him shower off the Duquesne residue, the priesting old world shame. Pittsburgh, you're all grit and gristle, turning crystal track marks, a man, meth mouth. I feed him, put him to bed. I'll keep watch tonight in a cable car ascending Mount Washington, your smokestacks blowing clouds over the confluence until all you are, Pittsburgh, is a sleepless shimmer. I will watch, diminish down to the savaged seed of morning, as impossible to watch as you are to name.
If every poem takes 100% of your being, how many 100%s do you have? I mean, you go for the gold every time. I mean, you never just slip in one. What does your brother think about all that love?
So my brother's been sober now since 2011. He was in his addiction for about a year, pretty heavy, but he's a Scorpio. So he never missed a car payment. He didn't miss a day of work, you know, but I mean, he was using quite heavily. And now thank God he has found sobriety.
But what does he think about the poem?
So I published this with his blessing.
When
he told me about his addiction, I told him I wouldn't write about it. It's the only time I've ever told someone I would not write about something, but his sobriety mattered more. I'm going to cry. Wow.
I am too. You know, this is so real. This book, this program, will you come to dinner?
Anytime you like.
Dinner, because
sure.
We haven't finished what we want to say. But, you know, I always say that the poet's life is the most ethical life in the world. And this is why. Because we're always weighing people's souls and words. And the fact that you got his blessing makes me cry as well. Because I know what went into that before that blessing. So let's hear another poem. You know, my family reads my books and they don't say anything. They think the poems are good, but they don't like what I have felt.
Yeah, right.
I hadn't felt any of this.
Yeah.
So nobody says anything about my poetry because they like me and they don't want me to have felt all this.
Yeah. It's funny. Dustin's my biggest cheerleader. My brother's my biggest cheerleader.
Aww.
My mother, on the other hand, who I'm going to read a poem that where she features next. And after she read the book, and I asked her, we have a pact where she doesn't read my work anymore, but she,
good idea.
She violates the pact and then has feelings. So she says this did not happen, but it 100% happened. Dustin remembers it. Dustin has a better memory than I do, so I corroborate with him. This is called Prophecy. Remember, my mother says, they found Adam Walsh in pieces. Buttoning my jacket, kissing my cheek, sending me off to school directly across the dead-end road. Street severed by woods, I couldn't shake its prophecy. In school, we play hangman, on the chalkboard, a neck in a rope, a word underneath in dashes, letters looming from the fog, filling in the blanks until one grinning boy hangs another.
I'll tell your mother we don't believe you and that we believe her. I just want to make peace on Thanksgiving. That's all.
Me too. Yeah. Every time we left the house, though, she would say that. Anytime.
Oh, that's a great line. No, you haven't used that line, though. Anytime we left the house, she would say that. That has got to be written another time because she sounds like an interesting mother.
She's great. Yeah.
I bet she is. I know she loves you. And I believe her and not you. So I want to talk about the Rose O'Neill Literary House. I have been there. It is heaven. Now you tell me what heaven looks like to you.
It is. I love my job. It's a three-story Victorian house on the campus of Washington College. We've been in existence. Literary Centers at Washington College been in existence since 1972, and we've been in that house since 1985. And the Lit House does lots of things. We have readings. We sponsor like 100 internships for students every year. And we have a young writers conference we're gearing up for in 2 weeks. So I am not off this summer. I am about to welcome 50 high school students to campus for 4 days of writing and workshops and literary camaraderie. We'll do a literary trivia night one night. They have a great time. This is our ninth year doing it.
You're leading it?
I assistant direct now. Thank God. There's a director who directs the conference. And the other thing, I mean, that's the Cherry Tree Young Writers Conference, but we have a journal that we started the year before the conference called Cherry Tree that I edit. So the conference is kind of a spinoff of the journal because we like emerging writers and no one's more emerging than high school kids, you know?
And you're a celebrity in your own right there, but you have to teach Composition 101?
I don't teach Comp 101 anymore, although I loved doing it, I have to say. Like, I do. I love giving people the gift of critical thinking and language because they have it and it's been beaten out of them. And just watching people's thoughts and words and language bloom, it's a wonderful gift.
I'm glad you said that. You know, Ellen Carter Woodbridge, who was at your retreat with us as a poet, she was teaching athletes at GW. And guess what she taught?
What?
She taught them how smart they were.
That's right.
Because she came from Antioch College, where she was my student, and everyone from Antioch has changed the world, as has Washington College, apparently. Let's have another poem.
Okay. This one is early English history, and I'm going to change one of the words so we can say it on public radio. This is early English history. Was too early. 8 a.m., Tuesday, Thursday, Elizabeth Hall. I slouched half asleep, first road, demarcated from the frat boys sitting in back so they could see up the professor's skirt. In the meat hall after, they surrounded, let me close if I shared my notes. I was in love with the black-haired outfielder, his backwards Braves cap, until he called me fag for refusing to raid our teacher's underwear. I didn't know how to fight back. I learned that semester about the rebel queen Boudica, whose revolt razed three Roman forts and the emperor's temple. Tacitus provides motive. Her husband dead, kingdom annexed, Boudica flogged, her daughters raped. The armies she led tortured its captives, but he doesn't say why. Some pain is negligible. Its survival cancels the wound of its birth. Most accounts say she poisoned herself facing defeat. Cassius Dio gives her longer, secreted away to the south, living unrecorded for years with her daughters. The boys in my class drew stick figures screwing on the wall by my room after I came out. I woke at night to wash out the crooked glyphs, the caption proclaiming, AIDS kills fags dead. I scrubbed until what remained was fist-sized, vague, and pink, a map of the possible world. Our final project was to cook an authentic English banquet, eaten family style at the professor's house. At the appointed time in the year of our Lord, I came with dessert, but did not see the moat she'd installed in her foyer.
Ooh.
The strawberry pudding flew like an arrow, pink spurting everywhere, especially across the faces of those boys whose names were lost the moment I joined an insurrection begun in AD 61 by a dissident queen. In the years since my disappearance, I have cemented my escarpments, foddered my cannon, sewn up my flag. I am painting my face, bluing my body with woad. Warn them, I am coming to punish my Romans.
I like the way you go from the scrubbing to cooking dessert. You know, for a narrative poet, you're very iambic.
It's true. I'm hearing it just now, reading it. Yeah.
Isn't it true? Like a da 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 da.
Yeah.
So all those years of music are in your body. And I think that is so interesting. It just means we have to just write enough and then we'll become words. Tell us about your podcast.
So Breaking Form is, we release episodes every Monday, 30-minute episodes. I call it a quickie in a sleazy motel with a fabulous library, because we're dirty and we're gay. And we, I mean, we play games like, oh, I don't know. Well, you know, replace
maybe
the word
we
poem.
Don't need to know.
Maybe just go listen. We're not for everyone, and it's okay.
But I am everyone. So
I think you'd love it, actually.
I will. Tell me, how do I get it? I mean, do I Google it or something?
Yeah, it's on everywhere that you get your podcast. So it's on Apple Podcasts.
Which is Apple. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's called Breaking Form, and I bet you do, too.
We have a really good raucous time.
I bet you have fun. And I don't know Aaron Smith, do I?
I don't know if you do. He has he's a poet. He has 5 books with Pitt.
Whoa, I better look him up.
Oh, you would love
five
Aaron.
5 books with Pitt, I would.
Yeah, okay, his last book is called I see the title. What?
I'll look him up, don't worry.
Thank you. It just left my he's gonna kill me. Oh my god.
Well, tell him I just looked him up.
Okay, I
and
will.
Tell
yeah.
Your mother, I believe her.
Listen, wild.
Is he funny and sweet and cute and good and what you are?
Yes, he's okay, all of that. Right. Okay. And also, don't mess with him.
And he doesn't take so. Okay, we will have now a final poem, and I will be so sad to leave you.
Oh,
let's have a final poem.
Thank you so much for all of this. I'm going to read. This is a poem again about my brother called Wisdom. Wisdom. Curse the wisdom saying I must learn to turn my back again on my little brother. Bless the dealer's squat prefab house, the blackout curtains that keep out the glaring afternoon. Bless the roaches. Numbed now to their filters in the quartz ashtray, smudging gray across the sleeper's face when the air conditioner tumbles on, smoke sour as his breath. Keep out the bad dreams. Keep the elastic off his bicep, the needle away from its sating vein. Praise the floor on which he lies, my brother bent like a burnt spoon, hands curled up to his chest. Hands stayed against turning himself to ash for now. He used to sleep that way in the bedroom we shared as kids on the floor in a house like this, curtains drawn, lawn untended, a person inside trying to die. We slept back to back on the thin carpet under the same blanket, under the static playing softly from the portable radio, drowning out the terminal sadness of that house. Bless the floor that holds him now, I cannot.
This is the Poet of the Poem from the Library of Congress. And if you ever want to know why poetry, just listen to this again. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We want to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation, the Sinipid Fund, Friends of the Program, Natalie Canivore, Avidesha Shani, Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer. Thank you, Mike. I'm Grace Cavalieri. And thank you, James Allen Hall.
Thank you, Grace, for everything you do and for your fabulous poems, too. Thank you.